This episode of Photobomb is brought to you by Headshot Tools Beta, the first platform built to help solve the unique problems of team and event headshot photographers. Automatically rename files, create customizable individual galleries, deliver headshots to any number of participants with one-click individual email delivery, and a whole lot more. Listen for later in the show to find out how you can get in on the Headshot Tools Beta.
You are listening to the Photobomb podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Welcome to the Photobomb podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me as always is Gary Hughes.
Hey, can you do me a favor? Let me see your hands. Can you hold your hands up? All right, good. And how many fingers do you have?
I have, depends on how you look at it, 8 fingers and 2 thumbs or 10 fingers.
Well, let's just say thumbs. Let's skip that whole controversial topic and let's just say your thumbs are fingers. You have 10.
I have 10 fingers, yes. I have 10
fingers. Okay, 10 fingers. Like 10 fingers. 10 toes, 10 fingers. So when you look at your fingers, are they all intact? Do you have any damage? Like your fingers, are they completely intact like the day you were born?
I have marvelous hands, Gary. My hands are a joy to behold.
Everyone says that about your hands.
They
it's
do.
True.
They do.
Yeah, I've never heard anyone say anything but positive. If your hands were a restaurant, you have perfect 5-star rating.
I'm Michelin rated.
You'd be a multi Michelin star hand. I want to do a little pop quiz. Do you know anyone? Who in my life does not have undamaged hands as of this last week?
In the last week, who in your life has damaged their hands?
Who in my life has a mutilated hand? Well, who does not have completely intact?
I have no idea. How would I know that?
Yeah, well, you could guess.
Is it you?
No, perfect. Yeah, okay. I mean, I got a little bit of scarring, but you know,
any one of those, the wild brood of small munchkins that you have running around your house.
So I'm at the studio last week, and I just sat down. It was about 9:30 in the morning. I got into answering my emails and checking relevant YouTube videos and photography news stories, you know, like you do. And all of a sudden, my phone rings, and it's my wife. And she is really upset. Right. And in the background, I hear a screaming child. And she says, "I need you to come home right now. Gibson just got his finger slammed at a door."
Ooh.
And the tip of his finger is hanging on by a thread.
Ooh. The doors are like, forget sharks and killer bees. Doors are what will kill children.
Yeah, it was pretty rough. So, of course, I just ran right out the door. And here's what a terrible human being I am. I got out the door, and I literally paused for a second and said, "Should I bring my coffee?" Because I had a coffee.
Here's my question. Did you ride your little uni wheel scooter or thing?
My one wheel?
Yeah, because you had jumped on your little uni wheel and then you're leaning forward like,
fast as it can go.
To my child.
No, I rode it to work today, but I took my car the day that this happened. So I run in the door, and my wife's sitting there in the hallway with Gibson in her lap, and he's screaming bloody murder, and his finger, there's just blood everywhere. Like, so what had happened is he got his finger slammed in the kid's bedroom door,
right?
And you could see like the bone of his little finger.
Oh, ho, ho. No,
yeah.
We have to put a warning on the podcast now just for saying that.
And the tip of his finger was hanging off. And of course, we're all like panicking. And Julie's on the phone. And I said, "Good. Tell them that I'll unlock the door, that we don't have pets." You know, I'm assuming she's on the phone with 911. She's calling our neighbor.
Okay. Is your neighbor a surgical resident?
Paramedic. He's a paramedic. He's a firefighter paramedic. And so like, and I said, "Did you call 911?" And she says, "No." And I immediately run outside and I call 911. They're like, "Is there blood spurting out of his finger?" I said, "No, he's bleeding, but it's not like spurting."
Okay, she goes, "No artery."
She's like, "Control the bleeding. Don't move him. They're on the way." So they get there. They take Julia and the baby into the ambulance. And luckily, we live about 5 minutes away from the best children's hospital in the state. So we're literally, you know, we were pretty well situated. So I got the kids, and then we have this incredible group of friends who are parents who all like descended on the house. They took the other kids. My mother-in-law came, like, and everything was taken care of. And I went right over to the hospital. And so by this time, they've got him sort of stable. And I'm shocked that the paramedics, the doctors, the nurses, nobody seems to be really like in a hurry. No, there's no sense, nobody's sense of urgency. And I find out when we get into the hospital that he was the third kid that day with the same injury.
Yeah. I would imagine it's probably a pretty common injury for kids.
Well, what had happened was he was toddling around following one of his big sisters. And, you know, he's right on your heels and you don't always know that he's there. And so she went to shut her bedroom door behind herself and his hand was there. And it just cut off the tip of his finger. And it was literally like hanging on by a thread. So the doctors come in and you know what? Huge, huge, huge respect and appreciation from the nurses and doctors at Advent Health South. They were amazing. And then this guy comes in, the doctor, and he's probably 5'5", just a tiny little man, probably Cuban, I would guess. And he's just very handsome. He's got a full head of dark hair, probably late 50s. And he's completely like unconcerned by this. And he goes, "Okay, we're going to do it. There is no damage to the bone. So I put in a couple of sutures. You go right home." Okay. They didn't even admit Gibson to the hospital. They just sewed his little finger up right then and there, wrapped him up.
That sounds about
and
right.
And now we go. Yeah. He goes, "In the week, sutures will disappear. His finger will be okay." I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I wanted somebody else to be like concerned. But then again, as I was driving everybody home after, I thought, you know what? Screw that. The guy who's going to sew on the tiny little tip of my son's tiny little pinky finger, I want that guy to be like Maverick from Top Gun. I want him to be like supremely confident, like just that big D energy. I want that guy to walk in the door. I want him to seem like this is no big deal. That's what we needed in that moment. And so it took like me and my wife and three nurses and the doctor, because we all had to kind of hold him still. Can you imagine a wriggling toddler trying to sew on the end of their pinky finger?
No, I cannot. I am blessed that neither of my children have ever had a broken bone, and I've never really had that nightmare scenario.
Well, it was tough. It was a tough scenario, but like, you know, you do what you got to do with your kid and everything like that. So they're all, you know, holding the little wriggling, screaming baby down, and he's screaming, the end of his finger's hanging off. He's in a weird place. Everybody's kind of holding him still. He can't move. And all of a sudden, one of the nurses pops in from outside with an iPad and she puts on the Pink Fong Baby Shark music video. And he immediately turns his head to the iPad and just shuts up and watches Baby Shark.
There's power in Baby Shark here.
There is great healing power in Baby Shark. And so one of the nurses said, like, "Do you have other kids?" And we said, "Yeah." And she goes, "Have they been to the emergency room before?" And we're like, "No." He's like, "So this is the only boy?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, we'll see you again," she said.
Yeah.
Because apparently, as she said, boys, it's much more common for them to end up in the emergency room multiple times over the course of their life, where it's like seems to be less common for girls. And I was like, "Is that a thing or is that just something people say?" She goes, "Look, I've been working in the ER for 15 years. She's like, "Yes." It's like boys are going to get hurt a lot more than girls. So, yeah. And so anyway, so he's doing okay. He's got a little like cuff on his arm because as soon as they bandaged his hand, he put his hand right in his mouth and started tearing the gauze off with his two little teeth.
Nice.
You know, so we have to give him like a cuff, like he's got a broken arm. And it looks like he's got a minigun robot arm now because the cuff is just on his arm so that he can't get to his hand. So he just learned to walk, the kid. So he's all lopsided and he's falling over all the time. But he walks around and he's just waving this big machine gun Mega Man arm around. And and so, we're having to clean and dress his finger every day. We got a friend who we see all the time who's a nurse and she's been coming over every day to clean his hand and to rebandage it for him. And like our friends have just been all over us. Help and take care of us because it's been a lot, but man, it's been a week.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Yeah, it was pretty intense. And here's how crazy it was. We got to the emergency room at 10 o'clock. By 1:30, we were home, bandaged and back to life. Like, it was bonkers, like, how that goes. Like, someone in your household can cut off the tip of their finger, and then 3 hours later, you're home and everything's fine. That's how great this hospital was. So I just wanted to say that's a really good thing. Also, I'm going to Home Depot today to get door stoppers for all of the doors in my house.
Yeah, you're supposed to be, you know, setting your house up. You're supposed to baby-proof the house, Gare.
Look, dude, this is our fourth one, and no one has ever gotten a digit severed in a door. So this is a new experience.
Okay.
And so we're going to, you know, those little door stoppers you can kick down, and they're just attached to the door. We're going to get it. I'm gonna get a few of those. So that way we can just prop the doors open. Nobody gets their finger slammed, and all will be right with the world.
I had an experience this week that was unique to me for the first time ever. I took my youngest daughter to get her senior photos done.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned last week that was happening. So what was that like for the photographer who had to have you in the room while that was happening?
Let's buckle up. All right. Everybody just buckle up. Here we go. Name of the company is Caddy, C-A-D-Y, Caddy.
Is it Caddy?
I don't know. C-A-D-Y. I would say Caddy.
Okay, fine. Yeah, all right.
Because of the D. Caddy would be K-A-T-Y.
As you like.
I don't know. Maybe it is Caddy. I don't know. So we show up, they're set up in this industrial park, and you go in, and there's eight different shooting bays, all operating at the same time, and kids everywhere and parents everywhere, and you can see the bays are set up for specific scenes or specific looks. About half of them are green screen, and then some of the others are set up differently. They're using Elenchrome lights and, for the most part, Profoto boxes, soft boxes. For the cap and gown and the, you know, the drape with the pearls picture that they always do, they're using two giant, like 5x7 Profoto boxes side by side clamshell.
Mm-hmm.
Great light, excellent, beautiful light. You know, exactly the way I would set it up, in close, no hot spots, beautiful. And then the other booths have got different things, and one of them has got like a lot of colored lights, so you get a picture taken in there, and half your face is red, and half your face is blue, and then there's another one they're using, is it a gobo, when you shoot a light through it, and it puts a pattern on the background. Is that called a gobo?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
So they've got like a gobo one that they're doing black and whites in. So you come in, and you've already prepaid for some sort of a package. You're supposed to go to these places and do these things. So she comes in, she does her stuff, she's going around. You would have been so proud of me. I stood there, I held the backpack, I was calm. I never said a word because I didn't want this to be a session where my daughter hated me for it.
Yeah, right? You also don't want her to remember her senior portrait experience to have been ruined by you because you couldn't keep your mouth shut.
Exactly. So I was quiet and just like, you know, standing off to the side and not saying a word. And I was doing such a good job. And then, then I begin to notice, like, she gets with one person and he's doing them, and I'm like, he's not even posing her at all. He's just like, is there anything else you want to do? Because their thing is, they don't cull. Every picture they shoot, they're going to send you as proof.
Ooh.
On the phone and as a print proof.
So, real-time
like,
saver.
You get to a station, they take maybe four pictures of you in that station, and that's it.
Uh-huh.
So, there's no trial and error, no experimentation.
Got it.
It's very hit and miss. Like, you get one guy who's doing it, the cap and gown, who absolutely seems to know what he's doing. And then you get the next guy who seems to have just been handed a camera and said, just here's where the trigger is.
That may very well be the case,
yeah.
As a matter of fact. Yeah.
But still, you would think the volume that they were doing, after a day, you should have some idea of what are good poses.
Yeah, it's just because you do a thing a lot, it doesn't mean you're good at it, right?
So she goes through them, and I'm like, okay. So then she realizes that she didn't have the right drape for the cap and gown. So she got to go back to the cap and gown again. So I'm standing over there. I'm sitting on my phone on the couch, not even paying attention. I look over. She's getting the cap, and I can tell she's not happy as they're doing the cap and gown. So I walk over, and the guy who's taking her picture is not speaking to her at all, really. He's just looking at her and waiting for her to pose. And then she would pose and he would take a picture. And then she would have to come over and look at the monitor and decide what was wrong with it and then go back.
Well, Mac probably knows what she's doing more than most, to be honest.
But she was getting upset. And afterwards, she told me the first guy that had me was like correcting me and stuff like that. This guy was not saying anything. She's like, I got to be the photographer and the model. So she said,
Yeah,
she was not happy. And I'm like, okay. So, and I'm like, okay, well, we're all done and let's go. She got the smallest package. And by the way, let me I'm not sure.
There was
about
a joke
this.
In there. I was about to say she got the smallest package, just like her dad.
I'm not sure about this, but it's my understanding that there's a session fee that you have to pay. The minimum is like $89.
Right.
To which I said, so you're telling me if you don't pay $89 to go to this photographer, your picture doesn't get to be in the yearbook? And I'm not sure if that's true, but if that's case, that's bull. The photographer who lands the contract to shoot all the schools in Hillsborough County should shoot all the yearbook pictures for free. In return, you get access to every senior in Hillsborough County.
Yes.
I don't want to say that unless it's absolutely true, but it's my understanding the minimum you were going to spend was $89 if you were going there.
And that's interesting, though, because that's going to eliminate families who struggle financially. And I would imagine that out of that $89, some of that money's got to go back to the school.
It's just if that's true, it's absolutely wrong.
Yes, that is wrong. That, you know, because not everybody has $89 for their kids. And what if you have more than one kid? You know, like, oof.
So, packages are like 179 gets you one pose and four sheets. And the sheets are, you know, like what, an 8x10 and, you know, different things. $400 gets you three poses, 13 sheets, plus the digitals, plus the portfolio, which we're about to get to. $550 gets you unlimited poses, 18 sheets, premium retouching, and a t-shirt.
A t-shirt, you say?
Yes, a t-shirt. So those are the packages.
Does the t-shirt have the pearls on it?
I don't know if it's you on the t-shirt or what.
The boys get a tuxedo shirt, and then the girls get a pearl drape shirt.
So we're walking out. I've done so well. I'm just trying to get her out of there before she gets more upset. And the front desk says, oh, we got to talk to you. I said, okay. He says, okay, about a week or so, you're going to get your proofs in the mail, and you're going to get this portfolio. And he opens up this portfolio that holds like 8 pictures. And you're going to get this portfolio for your 8 favorite pictures. And
it's coming.
You know what's coming. And if you don't like it, you can send it back. But if you keep it, we're going to charge you $200.
Ooh.
To which I say, I'm so glad you're with me on this, Gary. To which I say, we don't want the portfolio. So there's no reason to send it to us. And he says, well, it's automatic. I can't stop it.
So now they're basically what? Making you pay shipping on the portfolio?
I don't know if we have to pay shipping to send it back. But I know that was the point when, trying to keep my cool because I didn't want to upset my daughter, I quietly went off and said, this is bull. You are telling me I have to send this back to you or else you're going to charge me $200. My experience here today was not that bad, but now you have ruined it because this is predatory. I understand what you're doing and that's fine. But I'm telling you, I don't want this sent to my home and you're telling me I don't have a choice and you're going to charge me if I don't send it back to you for some reason? If it gets lost in the mail, you're going to charge me? I went off. I was like, I was so ticked.
But what was Mac doing while you were losing it on the
guy? Well, Mac didn't like that either, but she was also mostly upset about the way she got treated for the last picture.
Right.
Now, to be fair.
To be fair.
The pearl shot with the drape is beautiful. It's lovely. Yeah, we're very, very, very happy with that. That's pretty much the only one. The pictures came in. We looked at them. Some of the black and whites are so blown out, Gary.
Did they send you the portfolio?
They sent me the portfolio.
Okay.
And now I've got it. It's right. Hang on. It's right back here.
You got
it?
Oh, I got to see it now. Oh, there it is.
Here's the portfolio box right here. Let me bring out the portfolio for you. Show you what the portfolio looks like. Here it is.
Buddy.
Okay. So look, you can see this, right? So look at the black and white. Look at this black and white right here. Can you see how blown out that is?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Compared to, say, that black and white's not blown out. That black and white's not blown out. Right?
Hey, by the way, the 80s called. They want their folio back.
Yeah.
Not the pictures. The pictures seem fine, but that, like, that leather folio, like, that's...
The pictures. The
I even think $200 is a very reasonable price for that. But, like, they're going to make that and send it to you.
Yeah.
That's got to get an expensive proposition, though, because that's, like, a nicely put together folio, and they have to take the risk on printing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of those and having them mounted and put together and sending all of those out.
Right, but it's a risk that's worthwhile. I had a friend of mine that was in the car business, and he had a term for it. It was called taking the baby home. And in the car business, he used to do it all the time. He said that he'd be like, someone was undecided about a car, and I'd be like, why don't you take it home for the weekend, come back on Monday and let us know if you want it. He goes, and they always want it, because once they've got it, they don't want to give it up. So I understand the sales tactic of it. You know, that's fine. I understand why you're doing this. I understand that it's effective. But if I tell you I don't want you to send it to me, then you don't send it to me.
Yeah, it's all, I'm sure that because of the volume, it has to be something that's automated, right? Like it can't, you know, they can't have a thing where they go in and don't mail it. I mean, it's probably all just automatic from their printer or whoever, you know?
That's fine. But now, you know, you got me on my podcast screaming about you. I hope, you know. You know, because there was no way for you, because you haven't put in your system a way for the person to bring us up in the system right there at the desk and check a click a box that says don't send the folio.
Yeah, I love the idea that like, no, BC, it's your problem now. Mm-hmm. Like it's your problem now.
I haven't got to the best part.
Okay, and away we go.
Pictures come in, right? So you can now order these packages, et cetera, what do you want? So forth and so on. We're looking through the pictures. And I said, where's the cap and gown?
You don't get the cap and gown. The school gets the cap and gown.
No, the cap and gown will be sent to you in the spring, and you will have the opportunity to buy it then.
Why?
So if you buy a package today, you can't get the cap and gown in the package. That's going to be another thing they're going to hit you for in the spring.
Oh, man. Did you call yet?
No, but they sent me a give us a review type thing, and I gave them a piece of my mind.
Did you leave like a Google review for them?
No, I didn't, because I just, you know, I let them know, okay, here's, and I never said I was a photographer, because we're not going to talk about the quality of photos, which, by the way, they're not that great, but it's just predatory. It's just so predatory.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
We're going to send this to you. If you don't send it back, we're going to make you charge you $200. And by the way, the pictures that you had taken, one of them, the one that you're definitely going to want, we're holding that back so that we can hit you up for it again later. You know, No.
This just sounds bad and dumb.
Yeah. And Bobby said that like on the Facebook groups and stuff, a lot of the parents are really pissed off about it. But if you have to pay, if you can't have your picture in the yearbook without paying for it, take that with the portfolio thing and the cap and gown being delivered later. Those are three big strikes.
All right. So I would say this to any photographers who could service every school in Hillsborough County. It sounds like that you could do a much better job at much more efficiently than this company is doing. Like, the thing is, you know, when we do our volume stuff, we switch to a system that's basically all digital, and then we don't have to print or sell anything.
Right.
And we used to do like pre-sales and after-sales and all these things for those jobs. And we switched to a completely like seamless online self-ordered experience, and our sales didn't go down. They were fine. And we're doing like 1/3 of the work that we were doing before.
Right.
You know? And yeah, there's a point where, when it comes to sales and photography especially, there's a little bit of like a hostage negotiation thing going on. And it feels really uncomfortable to certain people, react very negatively to it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a fine line between giving a great customer experience that sort of, you know, draws it out and lengthens it. But as far as creating a great value for your customer, I don't think that it's going to get... I think people, photographers who do stuff like this, they're going to have to really change their ways as people Max age become adults, you know, and they have their own children and they do things like this. They're going to be like, I don't understand why we're doing it like this. It's 2030. This is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. Just right. give me a code to scan and let me order the pictures I want. Why are you doing this to me? You know, why are you mailing me anything? Just give me a link and let me go do the thing. And that's,
I have another thing I want to talk about, by the way.
All right. By the way, I know Mac doesn't listen to the show, but the pictures look great, Mac, and you look great.
There's a couple of them that she liked, you know, and Samantha was talking to me, and my oldest daughter, she was like, but I want this picture, I want blah, blah, blah. She goes, and Samantha goes, I don't get it. She goes, I was looking, I was like, you realize that Dad can reproduce any one of these pictures. And she was like, well, I don't think he can do this. And she was like, yes, he can. I was like, yes, I can reproduce any one of these pictures right here in the comfort of your own home. and you get everything.
With unlimited redos, like unlimited outfits.
Like when I did say one thing to one photographer when he was doing the Pearl shot. I was like, I said, can you bring the camera up about 2 inches? And he goes, well, we have to shoot direct onto the face. And I went, okay. But he wasn't shooting direct onto the face because my daughter is 5'9". And they didn't adjust the stool, and the camera was on a tripod. So they were shooting her a little low. You know, the camera was, I would say the top of the lens was about even with the top of her top lip. And don't you, right. And normally, I don't know about you, but normally I shoot kind of from the top of the head because, you know, you're going to get the farther back the camera is, the more it's going to, you know, move as a result
it
of.
Totally depends on the shot. If I'm trying to just do the thing that flatters the most people, I shoot slightly high. If I'm trying to make people look like awesome and powerful, I shoot a little bit low, like chin height or chest height even sometimes. But like, yeah, for the most part, I'm slightly above when I'm shooting.
Right. But if you're doing bulk stuff like that, especially with girls. Right. If you shoot low, it makes the bottom, it makes everything below the neck become bigger in the frame.
Also shoots, you know, you get a lot more nostril shoot into the neck.
Exactly. So that was the one thing I said. And then with the other guy, the other guy who was shooting the stuff with the colored gels, he was just asking her what she wanted to do. And she was just like, I don't know. So finally I was like, Mackie, turn to the side. And now, if you could, move here a little bit and shoot down the barrel of the gun. She's holding the gun on her shoulders. I go, shoot down the barrel of the gun so you get the leading line of the gun into her face. And he was like, well, yeah, we're supposed to shoot like dead on. And I was like, okay, you know, all you got to do is move, you know, 6 inches to your left and you can, you know, of course. And he did. I didn't say that. He did, though. And then it's the one she likes the most.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, first of all, I love how you're like, I was just on the couch playing with my phone. I didn't say anything. And then now the truth is like slowly come out.
It was only when it got to the point where the guy was just standing there waiting for her to come up with a pose when I finally said, Mackie, try, you know, instead of being broadside, try turning the gun towards us and you can look, you know, you can shoot down the barrel. And I was very timid about it. I was just very like, what if we tried this or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I don't know what would be worse is having the photographer think this jackass who doesn't know what he's doing is giving direction, or you announce that you're a photographer and started giving direction.
I never said it. McKenzie said it on like one person. And then after that, I was like, don't tell people I'm a photographer, baby. It's just going to make them more nervous. It made me look like an a-hole.
Well, I get it. But they, you know, they're shooting an incredibly high volume. Like every kid in Hillsborough County schools, if they've got that entire contract, you're talking thousands and thousands and thousands
every
of
senior.
Kids. Every senior, at least. And just a senior, how many high schools are there in Hillsborough County?
A lot.
Six, eight
McKenzie's senior class is 700.
Yeah, so that times at least seven, you know. So they're shooting, I can't do math, but I'm guessing that's a lot of kids, you know. So they're shooting 4,000 or 5,000 seniors.
Right.
And so, yeah, I would imagine that keeping it really, really consistent as far as the editor goes, like, I get all of that. But, these practices have been going on for a long, long time, you know, these sort of like predatory sales practices. But, yeah, somebody can just come in there and eat their lunch and be like, here's what you do. You show up with your kid and then we're going to give you a code. You just text the word, whatever your high school name is, a mascot. You text Panthers to 45645 and now you're opted in. We're going to take the pictures. And then by tomorrow, everything is going to be in a private gallery for you. And you're going to get a text alert when it's ready. The next day you get a text, bam, you order what you want, bing, bam, boom. And it gets shipped directly to your house and you're done. Like, why wouldn't that, like parents would love that.
Because they probably think they can't make as much money that way.
I think that they're wrong, you know, because the expense of what they're doing is ridiculous. You know, just think about what it costs to print 5,000 trifold leather folios.
Yeah.
You know, just that. You know, I don't know. I'm sure that they make money, but they have to narrow the scope of work so much that's, you know, so that they can make money. Every, like, moving 6 inches to the left or the right for each kid, that's literally 10,000 movements. You got to realize how much that slows you down. And so, like, I can see why they would say no to stuff like that or why they would want to. But yeah, you went through the process. It's good that happened to you, and the photos are fine. So everything's going to be okay. And you know what? I just want to say on behalf of all of us, I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of you for never directing any of the photographers. Wait, you did that. I'm so proud of you for not throwing a fit in their office. Oh, wait, you absolutely did that. So you're like, start this out by saying, I was so good. But
here's
the thing. It ends up being like, no, you were terrible.
If you're a guy who normally murders people, then you deserve credit for only punching him.
Yeah, it's like, I didn't kill him. I just stabbed him a little bit. Like
I said, I was fine.
Everything that you said you didn't do.
I was fine. I really was. And when I did, you know, like I said, the guy was looking around for, you know, now what? And so that's when I'm like, okay, a normal parrot would be, you watch the other parrots over there doing that. So I'm like, okay, so I'm just going to say, oh, move this way or move that way. But the angle of attack thing, again, that was with the one that she didn't like. And that's when I walked over and I'm like, okay, he hasn't changed the angle of attack on her. And she's 4 inches taller than everybody else that he's shooting today.
On behalf of the Photobomb podcast, I would like to apologize to Katie Photography.
Listen, I'm not apologizing to anybody, because the whole, if you don't send this back, we're going to charge you and you have no choice but to accept this. Yeah,
that's, I can see why, but I think that's pretty crappy.
Yeah. So there was another thing I wanted to bring up real quick, because I found this out today, that this episode, this has to be quick, but this episode is the second to last episode. Our last episode will be recorded in a few days live at the Focus Convention, episode mm-hmm. number 400. But I also discovered today that you and I will be reunited again in January.
We will be reunited again in January.
Yes, we will be reunited in January, because as I mentioned last week, I will be hosting the International Photographic Competition all day on Saturday, and then the finals, which will take place Monday night at right after the awards and degree ceremony. And I discovered today that you, Gary Hughes, will be one of my judges.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I have permission. Now you're looking at me like, am I allowed to say this? You are.
I haven't signed a contract or anything
but
yet.
But I have been told that you will actually be one of the judges for the IPC. That's a big deal.
I am absolutely just over the moon about this. I'm so excited that the first of this new version of the IPC, this head-to-head photographic competition with $26,000 in cash prizes, bragging rights, and the whole nine yards. This is going to be fun. And there aren't going to be a lot of live judges. Like there weren't that many spots. And so I was asked if I would do it. So I believe as of right now, I will be part of the pre-judging, which is the online portion of the judging that happens leading up to Imaging USA. But I will also be part of the live judging on the Saturday. Mm-hmm. Which I'm very excited about, and I'll be there with you, and so isn't that going to be fun?
My understanding that there is a very solid chance that you will also be part of the live judging on the finals Monday night.
I see. I haven't even been told that yet. Yeah, like you know more than I do. Yeah. I told Rich Newell, he's in charge of it, and I told Rich Newell, I was like, I'll do whatever you want. Like, no problem. Like, I'll clear my schedule. I'll be there. You just say.
Well, Rich told me. You know, and of course, he gave me veto power, and I had to think about it. And I was like, no. I said, Gary's a great judge, and he's a great, I, you know. And he said, you know, the great thing about Gary is you know that when you, because I have to ask for comment, I have to ask judges to say things. And he goes, and you know that if you need somebody to say, you can ask Gary, and he'll be able to say something. And I go, yeah, I've been doing that for 400 shows. I know that I can just, you know, hand it off, and Gary will be able to say something. He goes, and that's why I'm putting him there. He's a great judge, but also I can count on him. I can count on him. And I said, well, that's fantastic. So so you'll be there and I'll be there, and it's going to be a hell of a show.
Oh, dude, I'm so looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to this Imaging USA more than I've looked forward to Imaging USA in years. And I always look forward to it. But this one is going to be so, so special. It's in downtown Louisville at the Convention Center. And it within four blocks, there are so many cool things to explore, including a bunch of distilleries. There's like bourbon trails all around there. If you're a bourbon person, you're going to be right in the middle of a very cool city, as opposed to what we've been done for the last few years, which is in like a Gaylord resort. And the Gaylord resorts are great, but it will be a nice little change this year to just be in a city, and all the hotels are within a half a block or a block of the convention. And then there's a whole bunch of neat stuff you'll be able to walk around and experience. And if you haven't been to Louisville before, it is a very fun, cool city with great food, great entertainment, and of course, lots and lots and lots of bourbon. So just be prepared for that. And I'll also be speaking on the platform, I believe, on Sunday morning. I am the kickoff program for the convention. I will be at 8 o'clock on Sunday morning, talking about how to price and market headshot photography. And I'm actually opening up, and then the keynote speaker is after my class. So I'm like bright and early Sunday morning.
That's the dream spot. I've spoken in that spot a few times. It's absolutely my favorite spot to speak, because you're first up, you get a full room because everybody is there and they're ready to start the convention, and then you're done.
Yeah, everybody's still got enough energy to show up for you, and then you're done for the rest of the show, except I guess I'll also potentially might be in the final judging, I guess. We'll see. So that'll be cool.
It's about that time. Time for photography news. Photography news.
Most headshot photographers struggle to organize and deliver team and event headshots. They either do everything manually, taking up hours of their time, or they homebrew a complex system combining multiple apps. That's why we build Headshot Tools, a comprehensive solution specifically tailored to solve the unique problems that headshot photographers face. You'll be confidently delivering the best client experience to any size group without breaking a sweat. Right now, Headshot Tools is in beta, where users will get unlimited access to all features, including unlimited jobs, storage, and uploads for only $59 a month. Automatic file renaming, custom sign-up forms, individual galleries, mass email notification, and retouched image selection, all in one easy-to-use platform. Visit headshottools.com to join today.
One of the things that was in the photography news this week that I thought was kind of interesting, I know I bash on the film people from time to time. It doesn't mean I don't respect and love film. And I liked this little piece I saw about the movie Oppenheimer, which just opened last weekend. And apparently they had to get Kodak to actually manufacture a special film for them because they shot this on IMAX cameras and they shot parts of it in black and white. And no one makes black and white for IMAX because it's IMAX, right? No one ever thought, why would we put black and white in IMAX?
And so why wouldn't you just process it into black and white after if you wanted it black and white? But this it's kind of neat and authentic that they actually captured it in black and white film.
Right. So they went to Kodak, and Kodak had to make a special black and white film just for them. They said the cans of the film were hand labeled when they arrived, you know, because there's no label for this film because it doesn't exist for anybody else.
Yeah, well, if Christopher Nolan says he wants a thing, I imagine he carries a lot of clout in Hollywood. He every movie he makes does well, for the most part.
I'm sure they also paid a pretty penny for it.
Oh, there's no question. Yeah, but at the same time, it's like they could also go, nah, you know, this isn't, I'm sure it wasn't exactly a big moneymaker for them to create this film stock for, you know, Warner Brothers, whoever made the movie. And so, but like, you got to think about the movies that Christopher Nolan has made and like how big they have all been. Right. And so, you know, like Inception and all the Batman trilogy and, you know, several other incredible films. Tenet, which I really liked. I've heard a lot of criticism about that, but ones that I really like. So, yeah, his movies are big cinematic experiences. And so, like, imagine he just gets to go, can we film this on black and white, 70 millimeter? And then his production assistant's like, no, Chris, that doesn't exist. And he goes, hold my beer. And then he picks up the phone, gets the CEO of Kodak on the horn, and then 2 weeks later, they've got 5,000 feet of black and white 70 millimeter film. So yeah, I think it's pretty, I'm really looking forward to seeing it. I'm kind of apprehensive to see Oppenheimer because I feel like it's going to be really, really terrifying, like about the creation of the atomic bomb and the first time they used it. Like you think, like, I don't know, I think it'll, like, because it's all true. And so I think it'll be pretty upsetting. I may have to, like, watch that back to back with the Barbie movie. Like, watch Oppenheimer and then go immediately into a screening of Barbie to cleanse my palate.
I don't think it will be. I think it's going to be more about it. I think it's more about his life and more about, because I imagine it ends around the time of the atomic bomb. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know, but I don't think it's going to be, I think it's going to be more mercurial. I think it's going to be more about just a man and what it was like to try and invent this thing, create this thing.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll find out. I'll let you know if I have to spend a few hours in the dark holding my knees, rocking back and forth in the corner, and crying bitter tears for all mankind. You know, the crazy thing about the atomic bomb is the atomic bomb is one of the reasons the nuclear fallout and all those particles that exist literally everywhere on the planet is how they, one of the main ways they tell counterfeit paintings of like the old masters. And because like they when they test the paint, they look for like nuclear particles that only existed after 1945. So if something is a replica or a forgery, they can do it. They do a test on the paint in the painting. And if it contains these particles, they know it was made after 1945 and is counterfeit.
Well, I must say, this seems like a fact that I would have had.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm very much enjoying this fact.
You just got boo-rayed. You got boo-rayed so hard right now.
That's fantastic. I love this story. Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's look it up. I'm sure that I messed up some of the verbiage in there somewhere, but like that's absolutely true. It's like if you're, oh, this is a Van Gogh or something, and then they're like, okay, let's test a paint. Nope, not a Van Gogh, fake. And that's like the first thing they have to test, because if it was, you know, for paintings that are their provenance is supposed to be pre like 1944 or whatever, immediately they know that it's fake, because the fallout and the change on the planet just from the few nuclear explosions from tests. And from the times that they were used, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, it's literally in everything on the planet. And so since they make all those paints were made from a lot of them from flowers, from, you know, from things that from natural things that grow out of the ground, these are not synthetic paints. So when somebody's going to forge a painting, they have to make paints the same way that they were made. You can't use like synthetic paint or else they immediately will know that it's fake. So you have to make paint the old way the paint was made. And so if you pull flowers out of the ground and start mashing them to get these colors or whatever, they contain the particles of nuclear fallout that indicate like that they're post-atomic age flowers. Isn't that wild?
That is.
It's terrifying when you think about it, actually. It's terrifying.
Did you see the story about Japan is now using AI with their surveillance cameras to try and predict crimes before they happen?
I did this. I think this is still in testing.
Yeah, it's still in the testing phase. What gets me about this story is it makes perfect sense, right? We've got cameras on a crowd of people, and the AI is trained to look for, it looks for guns, it looks for weapons, it looks for behavior that, it looks for the same things that a cop looking at a crowd looks for.
Right, and it looks for people trying to get into areas they're not supposed to be.
Yeah, just, you know, and it's AI, and it's supposed to learn. And the idea being that these cameras can cover all of these things, and then it can alert a real person and go, we're seeing something here. And then, bam, now the real person, because that way, you know, because you can't watch everything at once, but the cameras can. And so I think this is actually not a bad idea. But what gets me is the headlines and the write-ups on this story all say that it will be a Minority Report-style camera. And I'm like, did you see Minority Report?
Yeah, because yeah.
Minority Report was about precogs who
had psychic some sort people. Of, yeah,
yeah. They could detect crime before it happens and everything. It was nothing like that. This is just a piece of technology that's analyzing patterns in a crowd.
This is much more like George Orwell, 1984, yes, than it is Minority Report. But yeah, sure. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, I think it's just to grab a headline. You know, plus Minority Report was the jam. That's a terrific movie.
Oh, it's
that's
a great
a
movie.
Really good movie.
Yeah, really, it's one of the best science fiction movies. Absolutely. Also, to attach on real quick to the AI story, the AI folks meeting in Washington, meeting with the president, are now saying that they are going to pledge to attach some sort of a logo onto AI images so that you will know if that image comes from AI.
So this is like Midjourney, DALL-E, right. You know, all these types of things. That they're basically like the big creators of these AI image generators met with President Biden. And I think it's non-binding, right? It's not like a legally binding thing, but they all basically said, we're going to, because in anticipation of the 2024 election, especially, I think is why this is happening. Because, you know, we've seen and talked about it on the show, like, you know, Donald Trump being arrested and tackled by the SWAT team and the Pope in a fur coat and all this stuff. And so, and they look so real and good that even if it's not necessarily believable, it's very difficult to discern. And the most insipid ones, the insidious part of it is when they're just regular photos that were altered rather than completely AI generated. Those are actually very hard to tell. All you have to do is like take a photo of, you know, Barack Obama reaching out to shake somebody's hand, and you go to generative fill and you just draw a little lasso around it and you say gun, and it'll it's like Barack Obama, you know, points gun at his wife. You know, you could make that in Photoshop in about 30 seconds. So but they didn't like sign anything, but it is pretty cool that they're all like, okay, yeah, we gotta do something. I wonder if every image it's going to generate now is going to say like OpenAI. So this is the funny part. So all these companies making images are agreeing to watermark their images.
Yeah.
Which is basically like what photographers used to do. You know, I think some still do, but for the most part, we don't really put those buttons and watermarks on anymore.
I think it's going to become so common, though, that eventually we won't even pay attention to it. Advertisements and magazines and so forth, they'll all have some logo in the right-hand corner. You just won't even, it'll be everywhere and you just won't even think twice about it.
It would be cooler if they created some kind of blockchain built into the image that social media platforms could read and automatically alert that they're AI generated or altered images. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think that if it was something that you didn't necessarily have to have a watermark on, because like you said, the watermark is something, not only will the watermark be something that we won't even, that we'll ignore for the most part, you stop seeing it after a while, like the ads on your Facebook feed, but like it's something that you could easily remove, you know. I don't think that a watermark solves the problem, because if somebody's going to take the trouble to generate an image, they're certainly going to take the trouble to just remove that watermark, probably using AI, like after they generated the image, you know?
Yeah.
And so like, what's the point of a watermark? Like, we've got better tech than that. So you could put it literally like into the EXIF data or metadata or like something into, it creates a blockchain line of code that Twitter and Threads and Facebook and Instagram and TikTok will all be able to read, and it'll just alert it automatically as you upload it. And that would probably be a little more difficult, but I'm not sure that there's anything they're going to be able to do that is, you know, going to completely solve the problem. It's going to be probably multiple levels, like being able to report images through social media as, you know, potentially fake AI generated images. Would let it be crowdsourced. Let the users also help police it, and I think that that would be helpful as well. So I'm on Canon Rumors. There's starting to be more scuttlebutt about the EOS R5 Mark II, and a couple of things that are being talked about and potentially tested by Canon right now. Again, this is Canon Rumors, so this isn't gospel, but that the R5 Mark II is going to be 60 megapixels instead of 45, which is a good and bad thing. Good for still shooters, for video shooters, that has potential issues. However, that could be cool. It seems like Sony and Leica both are using 60 megapixel full frame sensors. And so I think that's probably, I don't think that megapixels are the end all be all for like what most working photographers need, but it seems to be, I'm trying to think of a parallel here. It seems to be the thing that photographers say first about a camera. You know what I mean? Like when they're talking about it, oh, and it's 45 megapixels. And you're like, great, what are you going to do with 45 megapixels? Nothing. I thought not. Let's move
I don't.
On, you know?
I don't. It's not the first thing I say. But I know. It's always like the first thing they advertise, I feel like.
Honestly, until I got the R5, I probably couldn't have told you how, because that was, the marketing was leading very heavily with the megapixels, right?
Right.
Because it was the highest megapixel, with the exception of the Specialist 5DS, the highest megapixel full frame sensor, like, or at least one of the highest ones. And so I couldn't have told you before the R5 came out how many, and I shot the 5 series Canons for years. If somebody's like, how many megapixels is that? I'd be like, I don't
know. I was the same way with Fuji. I'm like 26, 24, somewhere around there. It's big enough.
Isn't yours the 40 megapixel one?
The new one is,
XH2?
Yeah. The new one's 40 point something. You know,
and how is that changing your life as a photographer, having more megapixels?
Well, it's helping with, I can crop more. That's the main thing, is that I can crop more. And I will also say that it has helped in that on the rare occasion that something's a little soft, if it's like something that's going to be used online especially, you don't have to worry about it so much, because you know it's going to be compressed so much that it looks sharp when you get it down
right,
to, you know,
it's all about
size.
End usage. Don't sharpen your images until you know where it's going. So also a couple of things that might be interesting to Canon shooters out there is that on this potential R5 Mark II, one of the rumors is that they are going to improve the 8K video into 8K 60p, which is really cool. So to be able to do 60 frames per second slow motion in camera rather than using an external recorder, that would be pretty cool. And also that there's potential for Canon to be testing 8K 180p. Now, 180p, that's like incredibly high frame rate for slow motion. So 120p is typical. You know, like 60 is recorded for a regular slow-mo. 120 is like, oh my God, you could do really well. 180 is, that's right out. Yeah, that's going to be a really interesting thing if they can pull that off. There's going to be heat generated. There's going to be sensor issues. So if they can pull off the technology to make that in the R5 Mark II and functional, that would be pretty cool. And I think that there's also talk about it incorporating AI into the autofocusing, which will be pretty cool, which it kind of already has machine learning built into it. They just didn't really call it AI. So it's going to be interesting to see that as new cameras come out from Sony, from Nikon, from Fuji, from Canon, that they're going to really probably lean heavily on the AI part of the technology that they're putting into the cameras. That's the robot overlords are going to make their way inside your camera, and so they're even more inescapable.
There was a story coming out of England or Scotland or I don't know, one of those countries I don't care about. And
we have booters in all of those countries. And you can't call England Europe. They don't like it.
Oh, I'm sorry. So anyway, I just thought that this was cool because I love it when they take a technology and that people love and complain about, and they figure out with a new way that they can use this to do something good that they hadn't really thought about before. So there's an organization that is tracking the Moors. It's called Moors for the Future. And you know the Moors, Gary. There's death on the Moors, Gary.
The Moors, yes. We've lost Heath on the Moors several times.
Heath had been lost on the Moors. And then the peat bog.
Peat bog. You definitely don't want to get stuck in a peat bog.
You don't want to be stuck in a peat bog. So what they're doing is they're tracking.
Or a Paul and Mary bog either. Don't want to be so a Peter, Paul, or Mary bog.
So they're tracking. Let's just take a second to let that one sit.
Come on, I had to pull that one out of antiquity.
You really did, because a lot of people have no idea who Peter, Paul, and Mary are.
Yeah, my dad actually used to play Lover by Les Paul and Mary Ford, and we had a lot of Peter, right, Paul, and Mary, stuff in the house as a kid.
Puff the Magic Dragon, for those of you.
Yeah, it's Puff the Magic Dragon.
So anyway, they are doing large-scale bog restoration, trying to restore the bogs. So one of the things they want to do is they want to be able to show the progress that is taking place in the restorations of all these bogs in all these places with photographs, like time-lapse sort of photographs, where you've got lots of photographs over time of this place taken from the exact same spot, so you can really show what they're doing. But they're nonprofit, I guess. They don't have a lot of money. They can't afford to send people out to do this. So what they did was they built these little photo stations, I guess, like a post in the ground. And on top, there's a little bracket. And if you take your phone and you put it in that bracket, it will take the same picture as anyone else who put their phone in that bracket. And on the post, they've got instructions for how to put your phone there, and they've got a thing where you can send the picture. So people who are out vacationing or live in the air or whatever, when they come across one of these posts, they can just go, oh, snap, snap, and then scan the post thing there, the QR code, and send it to them. And so they are crowdsourcing all of the images that they need for the bog restoration project. And I just think, what a great idea. Who was the person who was like, hey, I have an idea. What if, you know what I mean? Like, it's so outside the box to have thought of this. And yet, it's such a practical solution that costs you nothing but some railroad ties and with metal tops that you pound into the ground. And right. Now you're going to get all of these people taking photos for you to show what's happening in this project that you're doing all over the country.
Just another example of figuring out creative ways to not have to pay professional photographers. I'm glad you're so supportive of this.
I knew that was coming. But, this is one of those jobs where they wouldn't be a professional photographer.
No, it wouldn't. It would just be some intern with a DSLR or their phone. And the likelihood of this project having gone to a photographer or photographers is pretty slim. So this is a really neat.
Well,
they set up cameras of their own, and then to do that, and then there's expense there, and then vandalism. Like, this is just all they had to do was put a spike in the ground and a bracket, and they're
exactly.
Good shape.
And even if you were hired to do it, getting every single shot from the exact same angle and height over and over and over and over again would be very, very hard to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But here they've got basically a permanent tripod that doesn't move.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's pretty neat. I wonder if they're going to put it into one big time lapse eventually. You know what I mean?
I don't know. But I just thought it was a really creative way of harnessing the power of people and everyone having phones to do some good.
Yeah, every once in a while, it's easy to get bogged down. See what I did there? It's easy to get bogged down in how much negativity there is out there and being afraid of technology and stuff. And there are so many good people out there who want to be a part of something good. There's so much useful technology that makes life easier that, though it's nice that you bring in a little like human interest story like this and give us a little pleasantness. So let me talk about something terrible. actually, just a quick hit. The DaVinci Resolve, you're a DaVinci Resolve editor, aren't you?
I was. I use a different program now.
What are you using now?
I use a program called Wondershare. Wondershare Filmora.
Okay, cool. All right.
Easier than DaVinci Resolve is.
DaVinci Resolve is not easy. There's a learning curve, but it's a powerful piece of software. They just made a massive, massive update to DaVinci with 18.5, and that is now available to the public. And apparently, they've added more than 150 new features to DaVinci, which is, that's for video editing software, that's a pretty big update. Now, even Premiere and Final Cut have been pumping out some really slick in updates over the last few months, and so I think that DaVinci keeping up, especially since the bulk of it, the free version, is what a lot of people are using. And so for them, for Blackmagic, which is a much smaller company than Apple and Adobe, for them to be able to keep up is difficult. So it's amazing that Resolve exists at all, to me, in the market, and that it's gained so much ground with people. And I think they've been really smart about that. So if you're a Resolve user, go ahead and make sure that you download that new version and check it out. And I think that's about it. What else you got?
Well, if you use Photomator or Pixelmator and you're a Fuji user, it's possible that you don't use them because they won't process Fuji RAWs. They are soon going to be able to process Fuji compressed RAWs. They're adding that support, so that's a little quick hit. I don't even know what these programs are. I assume that they're Apple-based.
No idea.
Because the story says Apple's macOS doesn't natively recognize Fuji's compressed RAW format. So these must be Apple programs. But yet, even though they don't natively recognize it, these programs are putting support in so that if you use compressed RAWs, which I don't, but if you do, and you're a Fuji user, you can try out these programs.
Okay. And I had one, not super quick, but this is an interesting story. This is posted on Petapixel. And before I give you this story, I just want to remind everybody, before you switch over to that other podcast that you want to listen to, we are going to be this weekend on Saturday, this coming up at the Focus Convention. Go to ruinfocus.com, and we will be recording the last ever episode of the Photobomb Podcast live in Orlando. If you are just crazy enough to get on a train, a plane, or in an automobile, or a boat, or whatever else, other kind of conveyance, you could take your one wheel all the way down, go to ruinfocus.com and get the information. And they said, I spoke to one of the organizers of the conference yesterday, and he said that they will allow people to come just to the Photobomb thing. So if you don't want to register for the whole conference, then they're going to charge $25 at the door if you just want to see the Photobomb podcast. Now, we're not getting any of that money. That's not for us. That's just what the conference has decided to do. But if you're crazy enough and you want to come see us, go to ruinfocus.com, get all the information you need, and head on down to Orlando if you want to be there live for the final recording of the Photobomb podcast. And so I got this story from Petapixel, and the headline is, couple finds out their videographer is banned from the wedding venue. So this is essentially seems to be what happened. They booked this videographer, put down a deposit, and they found out from the organizer, from the planner, that this videographer and apparently his wife are banned forever from ever filming at this wedding venue. And so she goes back to the videographer, asks for her deposit back, and he says, deposit's non-refundable. And so she's in, obviously goes to where all people go to find out if they're an asshole. They go to Reddit. Because that's where you go. Instead of like introspection, thoughtfulness, mindfulness, meditation, and asking those that you care about, you go on the internet and ask everybody if you're an asshole. So, but anyway, so by and large, I had some interesting thoughts on this because, like you and I always do, especially you're trying to, you obviously want to be like, this video guy is a jerk or whatever. But there's not enough information in the story to make a decision. Because the question I had when I read the story was, did the bride book the videographer or the venue first? And if they booked the venue first, it was unethical for that videographer to take that money knowing that they couldn't work that venue. If they booked the videographer first and then booked the venue, I don't think that videographer is entitled or should be required to refund that deposit.
Okay, I tend to go the other way on that. I agree with you on the first point. But on the second point, I think it's reasonable when you hire a wedding photographer or a wedding videographer to assume that they will be able to work at any venue that you book. And if they are not able to work there, and it is specifically geared towards them that they can't work there, like they specifically were banned, mm-hmm. then that's out of the bride's control. Now, if you go and book a venue and the venue says, well, we have a list and we only allow, you know, these people to work here or whatever because they give us a kickback or whatever. Well, then I'd be more like, listen, you know, that's not my fault. That's not, you know, I've never shot there. And so I'm not banned from there. I've never shot there. They just won't let anybody shoot there unless they whatever. Then I can come down on the videographer's side. But if you specifically have worked there and were banned by the venue after working there.
Yes.
I think you give your money back.
Yeah. Well, even if the bride booked you first, wanted you, and then they found this wedding venue and they're like, sorry, we have to get our money back from you because apparently you're banned from this venue. However, you know, there are some interesting thoughts. Like being a vendor, like a photographer or videographer, and having been banned from a venue, do you have to like disclose that to a client? It's like, by the way, I says here on your form, you haven't picked your venue yet. Right. I'm just going to give you a list of the venues that we are currently banned from working at. Right. And just so you know, to avoid those when you go shopping for your venue. That's kind of like the sex offender who has to go door to door when they move into a neighborhood.
No. Listen, like, counsel would like to approach the bench, Your Honor.
Yeah.
And I would like to suggest that my client, if when hiring this vendor, there could be a case where they could not use this vendor because they had been banned from a particular place, then it's the obligation of the vendor to let me know in advance that there are certain places that vendor cannot work so that I know I'm going to lose my deposit if I go there. That's what I would say. If I'm the lawyer, I'd be like, okay, but you've got an obligation to tell me, you know, the deposit is non-refundable, but if you can't go to these venues.
Sit down, Mr. Perry, or I will hold you in contempt.
I'm just saying, yeah. So if you want to say that we get to keep it, that because we were banned there, then I think you're under obligation to let them know up front. By the way, your deposit is non-refundable if you decide not to use us. But by the way, these places are places where we will not work. So if you book one of those, you're going to lose your deposit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Ultimately, if it were me, this problem is created by a poor onboarding process on the part of the videographer, right? Like, but at the same time, I don't think that they are obligated to give their money back. If it were me, I absolutely would. And I believe it was like a $500 deposit.
You could make the case legally, maybe that you're not obligated, but you absolutely should.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're legally fine. I think it's ethically questionable. I'd be like, yeah, okay. So this is exactly the consequence of what happens when you get banned from a venue. Right. It's like sometimes you're going to run into these problems. So they should just put that on their website. These videographers be like, please don't bother applying if you've booked at the following venue.
Yeah, but you can't do that because then it opens up everybody to why not? And now you're putting it out there that you've been banned and you don't want to do
did
that.
Did you miss the sarcasm in that? Yeah, that's all right. Just went right over.
If this happens, you just give them their money back and hope they don't go to the internet and tell everybody about it.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Because that's seriously now it's on Petapixel. Like, so now everybody knows. So there you go. Yeah. Make sure just be nice. Like, I would assume. I remember when we shot weddings. And we would take a deposit for a wedding back in the day. That we had a separate bank account for wedding deposits, and we didn't touch the deposit money until after the products were delivered to the bride and groom. We always kept their deposit money set aside just in case until after the wedding. We never touched it, and that was it ended up being a good practice. We never needed to give anybody their money back, but like it always felt good. And it's like a tiny little savings account. Every time you shoot a wedding, you get a nice little cash bonus of the deposit that you set aside. So it's also a good way to save money.
That's a good idea. I like it.
Well, since you're pretty much not shooting that many weddings anymore, you know, it's all headshots for you now, baby.
It's a lot of them, yeah. Although I've got a wedding coming up next month. I will be in your neck of the woods. I'll be in Orlando at the Grand Hyatt.
Did you check with the venue to make sure you're allowed to be there?
I'm allowed to shoot there. Photobomb is written and produced by Boo Ray Perry and Gary Hughes and edited by Face Fioretti. You can find us online at facebook.com/groups/Bombardiers Lounge.
Bombardiers.
Our website is photobombpodcast.com. Gary's website is hughesfioretti.com.
Yes, it is.
My website is BooRayPerry.com, and you can send us email questions@photobombpodcast.com. We will see you at Focus next week.
Oh, man. And then when we sign off at that recording, I won't say see you later.
That's right.
I have to think about what I'm going to say.
Oh, yes. That's big for you.
Like a new Starfleet captain. You know, the joke is they always have to have their own thing to, like, engage warp drive. And yeah, and every captain has a different thing they say.
Right.
Yeah. All right. I'll think of something. I only have to think of it once. So if it's bad, it's bad forever. Oh well. Anyway, exactly. See you later.
maybe just say see you later. I mean the idea is you say see you later to people all the time that you know you're not going to see again.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just want them to have a little bit of hope, even though I'm going to avoid them for the rest of my life. All right.
All right. Go ahead and say it so we can end the show.
See you later.